One of my favorite yogi-isms is the future ain't what it used to be. I forgot how many times I've said, if I could just tell the future, man, I would have done a lot of things differently. Alas, hindsight is 20/20, and we're left to face tomorrow's surprises with today's resources. It's the best any of us can do. Now, this may shock you, but you know, I went to college and we learned all these attributes of God. He's omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. Well, if you break that down, he's none of those, because language just doesn't hold up trying to explain the Almighty. But even God isn't omniscient, as theologians claim. For instance, you can't reconcile free will with foreknowledge. There's no way to have both. If we're free, then God doesn't know what we're going to do. And if he does know, then we're not free. And if even God doesn't know everything, what on earth makes us think we can? Partial knowledge is something that we're all stuck with. It guarantees lots of mistakes and hurt feelings and broken relationships and inhumane behavior and great harm in our world. And we're only kidding ourselves if we think we can make a dent in it. The rich young ruler, he had it all. He came to Jesus with that attitude that he had it all. And Jesus said to him, one thing you lack. Even those who have it all are lacking. Rich or poor, wise or dumb, when it comes to knowledge, everybody is lacking. We're all rough drafts and lots of strikeovers. And I'm sure it pains some folks to have to admit it, but there's more to learn than we can know. And there's always more going on in any situation than we can see. Because a lot of times we see what people invested in what we're seeing want us to see and how we see it. Final judgment belongs to God. Because from where we sit, we're in no position to say. If you have the humility to own this about yourself, then today's text should speak to you. The scriptures are well aware of our knowledge deficiency. St. Paul said, we know in part, and our preaching is in part. But when the perfect comes, that which is imperfect shall be no more. So we live on a continuum between the perfect and the imperfect, some more perfect, others less perfect than others. But our Herculean challenge is to learn how to live together before we're fit to live with. The apostle likened our state of knowledge to something familiar to anyone. He likened it to blurred reflections in a mirror. Our ability to love somebody through a glass darkly. Our capacity to solve a dysfunctional family or a violent society through a glass darkly. Hollywood actors, a government, my soul, through a glass darkly, a mirror dimly, is how he put it. A lack of knowledge lies at the root of a lot of misunderstanding that takes place in the world. How often is there what I've come to call a disconnect caused by some having information and others don't have that information, And that's when decisions are made that aren't well received. If we were all on the same page, knowing the same stuff, maybe we could get it right. That isn't going to happen. When you don't even know the right questions to ask your doctor, you miss out on pertinent information that affects your health. And get one of these fancy cell phones. Just getting it is part of it. That's the easy part. But those of us with limited abilities then have to learn how to use the thing. In the first part of Paul's love hymn, he takes on three of the most common special interest causes that people have. The first one is spirituality, or as people like to say today, the spiritual but not religious. SNR crowd, to them, he says, if I speak with tongues of men and angels, but without love, I'm just a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. The second cause he brings up is to the preachers and teachers, preaching and education. If I have the gift of prophecy and master all mysteries and have all knowledge and faith enough to move mountains, but have no love, I'm nothing. And the third cause is we would call social activism. The do something even if it's wrong, folks. He says, if I give my possessions away to feed the poor and my body to be burned without love, all of that profits me nothing. These are three biggies. Prophecy will pass away. Tongues will cease, and knowledge is partial at best. What cause does that leave us to get involved in? Doctrine is divisive. Activism will make you jaded. Knowledge is limited. But Paul allows us how there is one cause that unites, that uplifts, that endures, and that is love. Before every important decision you and I make, we should first ask ourselves, will what I stand for and champion bring more love to humanity or less? As always, it's a matter of whose special interests get the publicity. And Jesus was sensitive to and frustrated with his disciples' rudimentary condition. He says, I have many things I would like to say to you, but you aren't able to hear it. God knows our knowledge is limited at best and harmful at worst. And my level of electronic expertise is a garage door opener. Give me something to do that I don't know what I'm doing, and watch out. I can identify with Paul. He says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I grew up, I spoke like a man. Well, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I grew up, I still speak like a child. See, we're capable of hearing some of what Jesus had to say, but God's truth is too high voltage for our skimpy wiring to comprehend. So maybe it's in our best interest that God allows us to know in part. We can't handle all of it. People in Providence, like any place else, are trying to do the best they can with the hand they've been dealt. And that goes for every one of us and every person you know and the kids you've raised and the heroes you admire and the experts who think their way is best and the media that's supposed to inform us. You'd think with our partial knowledge, we'd try to be more gracious and more understanding of each other, realizing that we don't know it all. Ought to make us humble. Instead, it makes us reprehensible. The greatest evil ever committed was not knowing. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That is the ignorance of denial that crucified our Lord. Maybe the next worst is self-deception. One reason our knowledge is partial, I think, is because our seeing is selective. It stands to reason that we prefer those who see things the way we see things. That's natural. How can anybody grow if they only hear one side of a many-sided issue? And that's why those who know the most boast the least. The wisest people realize they are forever learners. They realize knowledge, it shall pass. So we don't see everything. That's one side of what Paul is saying. The other side is we do see some things. Let's give credit where credit is due. What is man that thou art mindful of him, wrote the psalmist. Who lower than the angels? I'd have to say a whole lot lower than the angels. But made in God's own image. And as ornery as we are, God still sees something in us, and I reckon we've come a mighty long way in 4.5 billion years. Something's to be said for that. Paul said that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Now, I've thought about this a lot. If I were God, I'd just created us all good, but not free. Just make everybody good and get it over with. Apparently, God prefers us free with imperfect knowledge, which means growth, but not perfection, is acceptable with God. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus describes an encounter with a cautious man who was given a talent. And instead of using that talent, he dug a hole in the ground and hid it under the earth. Rather than risk losing, he was afraid of failing. And he thought Jesus was a hard man. And you can't fail around somebody like that. And as the story goes, God had some strong words for those who will not give him all that's unfinished in their lives. And we all have things we need to work on and all things that are unfinished. And this man had that aspect about him. Wouldn't give it to God, hid it in the ground. He doesn't want us to exploit it in arrogance. He doesn't want us to hide it in cowardice. And the opposite of masking and spinning and hoodwinking, of course, is confession. When we acknowledge our faults, we're no longer pretending like we're right, that we know everything. And isn't that why we come to church? To confess our humanity. When I was younger, I thought the purpose of going to college was to learn more. Stands to reason. After I graduated, it hit me that an educated person is one who knows how much he doesn't know. But where to go to find it? And one of those places where we know as we are known is the church. We don't pretend to know everything here, even at church, but we do know some things. We know that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That ought to be enough to know. Jesus from the cross saw through his glass darkly as the sky turned black at noon. And the Son of Man cried out, "Why have you forsaken me?" But the last thing he said was, "Into thy hands I commit my spirit." Trust in God is the proper response to partial knowledge. Apostle Paul, who penned this great love hymn, our text today, had this thorn in the flesh, he called it. And he begged God to remove it thrice. But the thorn remained. And Paul wanted healing. Instead, what he was given was grace. And God thinks that'll be sufficient. And yet no sufferer I've ever stood beside ever wants to hear that. My grace is sufficient, but I want healing. Grace. And yet Paul wrote this stunning poem about love that bears all things, that believes all things, that hopes all things, that endures all things. That's how to live successfully with our partial knowledge. Things aren't always as they appear. Given our time limitations, if we give time, in time, we will see things differently. Time sees to that. And however good or awful something is, in time, it will change. That is guaranteed. Jacob's son, Joseph, with his coat of many colors, was sold into slavery down in Egypt by his jealous brothers. It was a callous thing to do to somebody in your own family, and I can't think of anything more awful than going through something like that. But in time, Joseph eventually did well in the land of Goshen and rose to the highest level of his society, second only to Pharaoh himself. And one day his brothers who sold him into slavery stood before him at his mercy, and he said to them, "Though you intended to do me harm, God intended it for good in order that we might preserve many people." Who's to say how something will ultimately turn out? And what effect, by the grace of God, even horrible events can have on the future? Isn't that the center of our faith, the crucifixion of Jesus? Events intersect all our lives, the totality of which we can never fully see at the time. But the providence of God is at work even in these random occurrences. And the whole of wisdom is found in this simple insight. And if we could just accept that, we could relax a little and enjoy the journey and let go of those things over which we have no control, trusting that in all things God works for good. Paul wrote that too. Sometimes, as far as I can tell, God relates to us one of three ways. Sometimes God rescues us and fixes our messes for us, like the gospel miracle stories. This is one example. Much of the time, God collaborates with us, like he did with Moses at the Exodus. But most of the time, God gives us the strength to endure what cannot be changed, as he did with Jesus. Most of the time, that. Paul prayed to get that thorn removed. What he got was grace. The grace to endure that allows us to stand up to life. We better have something on the inside of us, some character, some courage to stand up to life. Otherwise, life will blow you down. Isaiah the prophet said, "They that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength." Wait on the Lord, renew their strength. But life being what it is and people being how they are, when there's no wings to fly, no place to run or go over, under, around, or through, by the grace of God, we run and not get weary. Sometimes energy from beyond ourselves breaks in and alters our circumstances. And they shall mount up with wings of eagles. And they shall walk and not get weary. One of my favorite prayers is attributed to, of all but people, a Confederate soldier. You've probably heard it, but it's worth listening to again. "I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humility. I asked God for help that I might do great things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might be admired and praised. I was given dependency that I might know God is God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for, but everything I hoped for." How amazing are those things that we don't even know what to ask for. I close with my version to the conclusion of 1 Corinthians 13. Paul had his way of doing it. He grew up and spoke like a man. I still speak like a child. We don't yet see things with clarity. Squinting in a fog, peering through the mist. But someday the sun's going to shine and we'll see it all as clearly as God sees us. If someday ever comes. But for now, that until that perfect knowledge does come, we have three things to do. Trust steadily in God, hope unswervingly in grace, and love as extravagantly as we are capable.